This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Hi, this is John with a few quick announcements before we start. First, we tried doing a live audio feed during this call, and it didn't quite work, and it impacted the audio quality. So I still think it's pretty listenable, but I've got kind of low standards. Secondly, these guys are doing new open source projects every week. So since we talked to them, they've done two projects. The first is an internationalization package for MVC. The focus is on ASP.NET MVC 4, and the goal is NuGet packages that you just drop into your app that make it very easy to start turning on internationalization. And as I speak, this week's project is a Windows 8 Metro application. This is built using HTML and JavaScript, and it's a personal finance tracker. So cool little project if you're interested in getting started with Windows 8 Metro development. This is a fun way to get started doing it and work with a team, so you're not out on your own figuring everything out by yourself. And thirdly, just as you listen, think about getting involved. I think that working in open source projects is a fantastic way to pick up new skills, to learn what other people are doing in the community, make great connections with engaged developers, and it's a good way to give something back. So think about that as you listen. And now, on with the show.
Hello and welcome to Herding Code.
This episode is being recorded on Monday, February 20th, 2012, or I think for you guys over in Australia, it's Tuesday?
Correct.
Friday? So this is also an exciting first live-ish episode. So we're live streaming and we've got a Jabber chat room going. And tonight we're talking to the guys behind Code 52. So we have on the line Paul Jenkins, Brendan Forrester, and Andrew Tobin. So can you guys introduce yourselves, starting, I guess, with Paul?
I'm Paul, beat enthusiast, ringleader of this mob. Thanks for having us.
My name is Brendan Forster. When I'm not doing Code 52, I'm a senior developer at Redify, and I'm living in Sydney.
And Andrew Tobin, at Tobin on Twitter, and just a programmer at Bush in Australia.
So earlier this year, I saw some tweets and blog posts about Code 52, a new project every week for a year. It seemed crazy enough that I really wanted to keep up with it. So let's start with talking about what is the big idea behind Code 52.
Okay, so it was leading into Christmas, and we were all a bit nutty at the time. And I think everyone was picking on Brendan a bit for his usual case of jumping on every project he possibly can. And so we were joking, why don't we aim to do a new project every week or every day? And I took it up as we could start a blog, you know, put out some ideas. And Brendan took it as, no, we're going to go ahead and do this project every week. And that's where we started, basically, you know, kind of overnight. We're going to start in a couple of weeks and we're off.
And so then what does a new project every week look like? Like, how do you even get anything worthwhile done in a week?
A headache. That's what it looks like.
So let's start from the whole we've got an idea point. You know, we've decided what we're going to do for a week. People have decided to vote on what they want to choose. We then go, right, we've got this idea. We flesh it out enough so that we know what we're doing. We make sure it's going to take about a week, give or take. We divvy up the tasks on Trello, set up the GitHub repo, and then people go nuts. And, you know, we go hard cap of Monday night, Australia time, which is probably Sunday night, US time. That becomes the sort of the fixed point where we go, all right, let's see what we've done.
Okay. So then one obvious question there is that at the end of the week, is the project done? Is it dead? I mean, what happens at the end of a week? Because people have asked that, right?
They have asked that. And it's a sort of funny question. We want to try and deliver something in that week. The ultimate goal is, you know, this thing will live on beyond that. But we kind of target that whole week range for getting something done because, you know, things might not work, things might not be right. Give ourselves a week for time boxing, basically.
Okay. But, I mean, then once it's done, do people keep working on projects?
Absolutely.
Markpad's a great example for that. That's had about three times as many commits since we finished the first week afterwards. And it's a lot more stable product, a lot more features added into it.
Okay.
But yes, it may get to this point where we kind of go, all right, we've got, you know, 20-something projects. We want to get the quality up on them. Because, you know, spending a week on each, you only get to do so much.
Right. You know, I had this discussion with some other people. I've been trying to talk this up just in general as a good thing to get involved with. And people worry about, you know, like, well, is it just going to create these zombie projects. But my thought is, you know, if there's good working code under an open source license out there, that's a good thing. And also just people collaborating on building, like I've learned a ton just from working with a lot of other sharp people on technologies I don't use all the time. That's cool, you know?
Yeah. And in terms of the learning experiences, we've learned so much around organizing guys. We've had people come in who learn stuff just by looking at the code, that sort of stuff. You know, if we weren't doing this, people wouldn't be sharing their knowledge around. And that's one of the benefits that, you know, even if these things don't get done, people are still learning from.
I don't think so far either that a single project hasn't been kind of kept up. Probably Jibber the bot, but even now someone's expressed some interest in it this week. So they're keeping going so far.
Okay. So let's talk about the projects you've worked on so far, starting with the first.
So the first one was, yep, the WPF Markdown Editor, Markpad. Then we kicked off an IRC-style bot for Jabber called Jibber, playing words with a T. After that, my memory goes a little bit hazy. No, we did a website for gathering ideas called IdeaStrike that we put up on App Harbor. We've had some people who are running their own versions of it. That's probably one of our most interesting projects because we threw together a whole bunch of these technologies that we were not really familiar with, but we got a whole bunch out of it, particularly when you can go and find the authors.
I think that was the one I did the drive-by on where I just like
that was it.
Added yes, you tests and then went away.
Exactly. Thank you very much.
After that, we had Samurai, cross-platform, well, the basis of the cross-platform game. We had the XNA component and the MVC4 component for the server. After that, we had Metro CSS, so a bit like Bootstrap for Metro-style websites. That's didn't attract a lot of attention, but we're getting there. Then Pretzel, which is the .NET equivalent of Jekyll, so a static site generation tool, and you can turn a whole bunch of markdown files into HTML. And last week was Karnak, the magical keyboard utility for presentation.
Okay, so quite a variety. So you said that there's voting and stuff that goes on user voice. Is it, you know, is it just straight democratic vote, or how does the kind of what project goes on each week? How does that selection happen?
Yeah, so there's a number of ideas which are, you know, very popular at the moment. We're trying to mold them to their right format. The big one that we've been asked for is Git for Windows, doing a decent client for that. We've basically held off because the GitHub guys have been doing their own thing. So hopefully once they go public, we can decide whether that's a good idea or whether we need to evolve the suit. And there's a couple of ideas that are around which we're kind of resource constrained. We have, you know, we know we could do some stuff, but without having the right skill set around or the hardware in the case of some, it's kind of hard for us to get these things off the ground.
So that leads to some other obvious questions. Are these all .NET projects? And, you know, in general, within a project, how do you decide which technologies to use?
Basically, like the law of two feet. If you're around and you want to get involved with something, we'll happily work to what you guys want to do. For example, the one that we're doing at the moment, a GitHub plugin for Office. We threw that idea out there in the middle of last week. It didn't get a whole lot of votes, but there was a lot of chatter around it. And we decided that we could put this together fairly quickly and just demonstrate what you could do without having to invest a lot of time in it. So that became this week's project. And then once we've got some time up our sleeve, we'll expand and some time for planning future stuff.
We kind of do choose something each week that gives us a bit of learning to go. Like, we played with Nancy, we're playing with Office integration this week. We do kind of choose something that everyone knows a little bit of, but throw something in to learn with.
Yeah, so it's around not only doing the stuff you do day-to-day. You know, some people might do web or client development, you know, as their day jobs. We wanted to kind of give these guys the opportunity to do those things that they wouldn't typically do and kind of give them an environment to do that.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, honestly, that's been one of the things that's been, like, I work on set tools and set things day in, day out, and it's been fun to just say, okay, this week I'm doing WPF, this week I'm doing Nancy, and just kind of, I don't know, it's a little bit like going into the sushi restaurant, you know, and what is it called, omakase or whatever, you know, and it's like, what are you serving today? And it's kind of fun to go along for the ride a bit.
Just watching a little travelator go around with food on it.
That's one of the things that we've found, that is, we've had quite a few people, web developers or their desktop developers or mobile developers, but they've never been comfortable enough to jump into a new project. Part of Code 52 is we wanted to show that open source isn't scary, and neither are these particular particular texts or projects that we're working with. So having these bite-sized pieces and bite-sized projects has suited a lot of people really well.
So what do you say to that? You know, people kind of show up in the Jabber chat room, which is kind of the social hangout as well as, you know, businessy communications for the projects. And so people show up and say, how do I get started? And I know earlier you talked about, you know, there's Trello and there's User Voice and all that. But I mean, what do you tell people as they just kind of wander in and say, I've never done open source. I don't know Git, you know?
Well, not the Git question. Yeah. So we've got some rough documentation on, you know, the bits and pieces that you should be familiar with. Some ones found a need earlier for having some basics around getting started with that. It's gotten a lot better in terms of people dropping in and, you know, the questions have kind of trailed off, which is a good sign. We're now looking at, you know, the other side of that, which is the Trello, the project management, which we don't really utilize as well enough, because you need to let people onto the board and it's not truly free for all, which we would love.
Yeah, finding the time to flesh out some of those ideas and get them up on Trello is sometimes a bit difficult when you're spending the entire week on a project. But we're getting there. We've got Git documentation up on our blog. We've got documentation specifically on how to contribute to our projects. And we try and put as much as we can onto our blog or onto our projects, point people at it in the chat room and try and get them a bit started. But Git is definitely a problem where people come in with an issue.
Yeah, but the whole Git situation is people are learning new stuff. We've had a lot of Perforce guys drop in and kind of, you know, ask, you know, how does this Git thing work? And so I'd say that's honestly just part and parcel of us doing new things.
Scott, any thoughts?
Cool.
Have you got any ideas for what to do, Scott?
No. Actually, I've got a ton of ideas of different kind of code projects, but I always start them and I never finish them. So I don't know if bringing them up would be any good or not.
That's part of all of the same projects that we put in onto the tracker were personal projects that we kind of fleshed out a bit. We thought, oh, this might work, but never found the time for it or just thought it was stupid. In the end, we've done a couple of them and quite happy with the results so far.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you just need other people to bounce the ideas off. Sometimes you need other hands to get involved because you just don't know the technology. And so a lot of what we've done, our first one, MarkPad, was something that a couple of guys had taken a shot at, come back, submitted it, and it's come out into a very project.
I found that to be huge, too. It can be really frustrating to try and work on something all by myself. And, you know, it kind of lingers for a long time and doesn't, you know, it takes a ton of effort to get to a 0.01 alpha stage, you know. And so it's great when you've got, you know, 10 people or so hacking on something for a week. You really do get something kind of working pretty quickly. So that's fun. I noticed, too, that there's you guys have a lot of, you kind of have a toolkit that you leverage. I mean, there's the Ma app stuff. There's some kind of standard things that you reuse. Can you talk about some of those?
The Ma apps Metro library we've been using for the UI is available in Nougat. It's simply so that we don't have to reinvent the wheel every single week. So at the moment, we've been using AutoFac, Ma apps Metro, JSON.net, and Caliber Micro is probably the few that we've been using every week. And that's, yeah, again, is just simply so that we don't have to relearn every single component. We might have an entire idea or entire technology we're new to, but we don't want too many things in one week.
Mm-hmm. So right now, most of the projects, with the exception of like Metro CSS, have been very CLR and .NET oriented. They're written on those platforms. Have you thought about doing like some crazy, you know, project in some dead language or something else, like trying to write a, what would be a good one? Even just trying to do like Markdown Pad or whatever, trying to do that in Smalltalk or, not doing it in Ruby because that's too mainstream, but, you know, something like Clojure or even Scheme, just trying to do, you know, some crazy package.
So you're saying WPF isn't dead enough for you?
I mean, it's pretty dead, but it still runs on the CLR. And that's like, you know, you can always fall back to just writing code instead of trying to write brackets all the time.
I'd see it as probably being more pragmatic. Yes, we could learn a whole bunch of new stuff, but I'd rather build something cool and I'm not that fussed about the technology choice. We've been doing .NET stuff because that's the stuff that comes easiest to us, and that's the stuff that we're quickest at.
I wouldn't say we don't want to do something else, because, I mean, obviously we look at technologies like Node or Ruby and we think, you know, we could do something like this, but really we kind of want someone inside the room who can show us the best way of going, the packages that we use, you know, really kick us off, because we've only got a week to give something back.
I'm trying to chase some people to be champions, sort of, you know, drive a project each week, who are that sort of technology specialist in that field. And then we just need to line up the right ideas.
I've noticed that, you know, when people come by and jabber and say, hey, why this? Why aren't you using, you know, whatever, Java or C++ or Objective-C or blah, blah, blah. And a great answer. And not, it sometimes comes across as a brush off to say, okay, fine, you do it. But really, that's a logical answer too. It's, hey, if you're excited about this and you're willing to, like you said, champion it, because it does take someone to lead the project, right? I mean, then it seems like that's necessary to go forward anyways.
Yeah, so we're not trying to be exclusively .NET, but we want to get everyone involved, you know, whatever the languages you've got. But ultimately, we're the guys kind of, you know, doing the grunt work at the moment. We're happy to help out with others.
Yeah, when you've got one guy volunteering to do something in Java or any language, and there's not really excitement from a lot of other people, we kind of need them to bring a couple more guys they know into the crowd. And I mean, we're happy to learn new things, but if we don't know them, it's a bit hard to say, well, this week we're going to do Java and you're the guy.
So what's the reaction been like as far as the amount of people that have showed up and, you know, community reaction, all that, good and bad? What have you thought overall?
Mostly positive. The GitHub post a while back got a lot of interest, a lot of eyeballs on things, and most of the stuff was good. Again, it was the, you guys are doing .NET sort of, you know, dismissive reply, but that's part and parcel.
Yeah, there seems to be a bit of a conflict between some people where you can't do open source on .NET, and likewise, just because we've done .NET once, we can't do any other language. So we've had a very mixed reaction.
What about as far as, like, it does seem like watching Jabber that the Code 52 room has kind of turned into a pretty major hangout as far as, you know, people that are doing open source on .NET, even if they're not involved in Code 52 that week, are hanging out in the chat room. That surprised me. I didn't expect that many people to be kind of hanging out there regularly.
The very cool people that, you know, kind of drop by and just hang out, you know, over the course of a week, you know, even if they're not involved with the project, is quite cool. And I think we still need to get back to that 107 or something we had in the room at one stage. That was an awesome number to see.
So as far as, you know, the open source space in .NET in general, I'm curious about your thoughts overall. I mean, for me, part of the reason I got really excited about this is because I know there are some great open source projects out there, and I think and some, you know, good open source developers that are just kind of working away, but they don't get a lot of notice sometimes, and there's not a lot of like critical mass sometimes on things to really get a buzz going. And so for me, it was exciting to just see, like we were talking earlier, you get a bunch of people on a project in a week and you really get a feel of something going. I know you were talking about like doing this kind of as a how crazy would it be sort of thing, but did you do this also kind of to fill a need, or was it really just because it was something you wanted to do?
I don't know if there's any ulterior motive to what we're doing, you know, world domination, fame and nice, but I guess from my perspective, I just wanted to show what was possible. You know, you don't need to have a giant install base to hit something off. You don't need to, you know, invest a lot of time, you know, keep things simple, show some code off. Yeah, we just wanted to lower the barrier to entry.
Yeah, I mean, we were doing open source, mostly on the MAR projects. But, I mean, we've always had an interest. We're always at it, and we're always trying to drag other people into it. So, I mean, it was trying to say we're not seeing that many people in the .NET realm, at least that we know. You know, they're all working on small projects, kind of isolated. What if we could get other people, drag other people into this, and then build something bigger out of it?
I think that's the thing we've seen from a lot of the .NET in particular, open source developers, that it tends to be a us versus them sort of attitude. So whether they've got a big project comparing to a little one, so maybe two different IOC containers or something like that. when they don't necessarily have to be competing with each other, they can be helping each other doing their things in a different space. And I think the conversations we've had around that because of Code 52 have been quite good. People haven't been necessarily helping out. As you pointed out, John, they've just been hanging around in the channel. But getting the general awareness up is fantastic.
So you mentioned the MA apps a few times. How did that get started? What is there any kind of meaning behind MA? Is it just, or, you know, like, where did the whole
MA... I really, really suck at naming things.
So why not come up with a new project every week so you have to come up with 52 names?
I didn't think this through very well.
So how did... Was MA Tweets the first one?
Yeah, it was. MA Tweets was... at the time, Nick Hodge from Microsoft Australia was going through a phase where he loved lolcats. So MA Tweets was my first WPF open source project where I was trying to promote it to him. So it was something along those lines. From there, it's just been easier to keep the MA prefix on everything. That's been about the reasoning for the name.
I think we've now gone far more random with the project names, like the lovely Johnny Carson reference that we had for Karnak.
Right. Yeah, that's a nice thing when you've got a new one every week. I mean, you can be a little bit more, I don't know. Like you can not be
esoteric.
Well, yeah. like not just about names, but also you can try things that may or may not completely work. I mean, exactly. Hopefully we'll work, but if they don't, well, we've got 51 more
it's
of
only
them.
A week. Yeah. The whole pretzel name came about because Paul likes to do a lot of cooking, and we were discussing, you know, what this API might look like, and we ended up talking about cooking too much, and
I got pretty hungry.
Which reminds me of the cake incident.
Oh, yes. Beta testing a website is good. Maybe not get partners on it, but yeah.
So IdeaStrike is a site where you can similar like to user voice and you can put in an idea and vote for it. And so I was playing with it and I showed my wife. And so she logged in on another computer and put in an issue that I should make her a cake. And then it got the highest votes.
Wish we kept that around.
Yeah.
Did you then actually make her the cake?
I did not. I don't know if you've heard the song, It's a Piece of Cake to Make a Pretty Cake. What is that? Lazy Town? It's a kid's song. It's a girl singing it, but then people have made some hip-hop remixes of it that are pretty funny. So I've had that stuck in my head since then.
Well, I guess that's totally fair. I mean, she wanted a cake. You've got a song stuck in your head. It all evens out.
Right, right. So this week, the project is Git-oriented, but it's Outlook, which is kind of an interesting mix.
Well, yeah, I mean, we were talking about basically how we do things, and I was thinking about how I do things at work, and people send you, you know, things throughout the day that you need to action on, and why not tie that back to your issues on Git? Other source control systems do it, so I just thought, here's something that I just haven't seen out there. We should have a go at that. And it probably helps out the corporate culture, and it probably helps out us. So anything that can help us is obviously to kick off development on.
So how does that work? I mean, jumping back, like somebody knows how to write WPF and web apps and, you know, I assume this is it's VSTO for the Outlook plugin. Right. Are there specialists that jump in for each one, or do you guys just know everything?
We know VSTO MVP, don't we?
Yeah, he happens to work with me. So he's got a library that's called VSTO Contrib, so we can use that for the infrastructure for the app and then some WPF on the top.
Yeah, so Jake, who does that library, has been helpful to us throughout, and obviously we're all pretty good friends with him, know him from around the traps, and it's just good to have him there to, you know, help us out.
So you guys are all in Australia, and a lot of the people involved are in Australia. Is this is there just a huge development community in Australia, or do we just happen to have them all on the call right now? I mean, what's the scene like there?
Well, we're from the future where everyone has adopted open source.
It's in particular in terms of the .NET community, it's fairly, you know, close knit. I've been fortunate to work in Melbourne and Perth recently with my current job, and so I get to hang out with all these guys, and yeah, everyone kind of knows everyone.
And the conferences out here are pretty good too. I mean, I live pretty rural, but once or twice a year I get to go to a conference, usually free, and you just get to meet all these guys. I mean, Twitter is been enormous in helping us connect with each other, I guess. And it's a huge culture, really, of .NET developers over here. So, you know, we'll try and pull in as many as we can.
In particular, recently there's been the DDD, developer events. They've been running them in Australia. So it started out in Melbourne and now Sydney, Brisbane, Adelaide, and I'm fairly certain Perth is coming up this year. So spending a Saturday hanging out with everyone else, it's not just .NET. Again, we can reiterate that, but it's a good way to catch up with everyone no matter where you are in the country.
So we had a few questions come in from Twitter. It looks like they're all by Wolfbite, which I don't know his name. Does anyone happen to know?
Mike.
Okay. So he said, question number one is, how do you balance the shifting of tools, ideas, processes against the goal of attracting people to .NET open source? So I know we've kind of been through that a few times, but I mean, as far as like you look at a project or you look at something to do, is it just how you feel at the moment or?
Oh, no, there's certainly a number of factors and it's still kind of week to week at the moment until we can get that backlog up. We've got a schedule for, you know, things that are close to being picked up, things that need more information, but in terms of, you know, the actual flow, until we can get sort of more people helping organize, it's going to be, carefully monitored.
Okay. And then another question from him is, are you guys tired yet? And I would imagine you would have to be, right?
Yes.
I had two weeks off and I'm still pretty tired. So they've been shouldering the load during that time. So they're tired and I'm tired. I can guess how tired they are.
Yeah, and when you fly back, this is on Sunday night, don't get home till about 2 in the morning, you have to get up to work the next day. That's not even involving any Code52 stuff. Yeah.
So how does that work? I mean, is this, as people come on board, or is it possible that other people will be able to, you know, help shoulder the load or maybe adopt some of the older projects, you know, so that you're not having to manage 52 projects day in, day out?
Yeah. Certainly, we've had a few guys pick up projects, Markpad, and I think we've got one lined up for Jibber and IdeaStrike. Those sorts of people are definitely helping out. We'd still like to get those sort of champions on board for new projects so that we can help organize the schedule better.
I was thinking of, there's a music festival called All Tomorrow's Parties, and they have this idea where they have a curator, and so they'll have, you know, a famous music producer or a musician or something curate a show. And they do this for, you know, other things too, but I was even thinking you could have somebody like, you know, maybe a Miguel de Acosta or, you know, whoever, somebody come in and kind of champion a project for a week and, you know, maybe bring a community with them or that kind of thing. Have you guys looked at anything like that?
I'm reaching out to a few people at the moment to see what we could do. I'm certainly open to ideas. Maybe we need to kind of loosen the whole a new project every week thing. We want to sort of, you know, drag in a bigger audience. Maybe we need to ease up the deadlines. But, yeah, we're open to ideas.
And the deadlines are soft deadlines, like we've been saying. I mean, we just want to kind of kick off a new one. But it obviously lives on a lot longer than that, we'd hope. But, I mean, we're open to anyone coming in and helping us, obviously. So if anyone wants to help organize, you know, they can talk to us. We'll try and set them off. We've had a couple of guys take over the old projects, and that's worked out really well for us because they're relying on us less. We can trust them a lot more. We trust a lot of people, but we can give them more ownership over the project, and it's less stress on us to keep it going. And we're happy that the project's living on.
Getting back to Hatter's Gonna Hat, should I ask who Miguel is?
No fun, John.
You know, I've been enjoying Hatter's Gonna Hat. And that's my...
it's your contribution, and it's an excellent one.
That in the Konami code.
Konami code should be in everything.
You know, it's funny, this past week, so this is Karnak, which is the... keystroke, you know, it shows what you're typing, it shows the hotkeys, and so people can watch you and as you're presenting or doing a screencast, and they can see what you're typing and learn your cool keyboard magic. And so that just seemed like it had to have Konami code. Like I'd snuck it into some other projects, but this one just had to have it. And I was glad to have everyone's, you know, backing on this and that it had top priority. But it's funny because as I started looking at it, then I thought, well, I'm not just going to jam it into this place. It would really be messing with something low level. And it ended up that it kind of ended up, requiring some refactoring, I think in a very good, in a good way. like it was like, well, we should really move this into another thing, and if they're abstracted into files, they could be updated from a feed. So I call this Konami-driven development, and I think it's really going to catch on.
We had a similar thing with Pretzel, where we had a simple, you know, this thing comes into this, comes into this, and I reckon over the course of the week, we changed the internal, you know, architecture about four or five times, and I think we're still not quite happy with it, but doing the job.
In Konami-driven development, would combo breakers be the equivalent of meetings?
Well, you know, and there's a difficult two parts to the Konami-driven development, which is once you find I implemented the code, but then you really do need some kind of cool Easter egg. And in IdeaStrike, all I did was randomize the back color of every div on the page, but I think we need something better for Karnak.
Can we embed a Konami game in there?
I think you're onto something.
They're public domain now, right? Surely.
Yeah, why is this keystroke thing, you know, 460 megabytes?
Yeah, we're going to have to introduce a boss level.
Well, I think the Konami code may be valid Perl script too.
Are there areas you guys want to talk about?
We've had people asking Windows 8. What are you doing about Windows 8? What are you doing about Windows 8? And we've kind of just kept the standard line is we're waiting for the beta.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. And I imagine there's quite a bit, you know, there's WinRT and there's, WWA and, you know, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, when's the first Code 52 C++ Metro project going to come out?
I have to do some C++. We can do a game.
No, it's got to be something like a blog client or a Twitter client.
I'm happy for my YAML client to be in C++.
There we go.
I think I've taken that week off, though, so I can't help out on that one.
Well, and that Samurai game, actually, it's got a back end, but it's a multiplayer game with the possibility of having a few different clients. So, I mean, that's one where you could have a, you know, 1 week where you're just putting on, you know, Windows 8 clients for that back end that's already written.
Maybe we should do it in Silverlight.
No comment.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny because people have talked about, you know, like, well, could you do something cross-platform? And I mean,
the tricky stuff with that is a little bit of access to hardware, but, you know, having the right testing environment, and it does add complexity. Even with a situation like Mono, I was still having issues with getting Pretzel working on it, timelines and pressure, and yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, we kind of breezed over that a bit. But how do you have the whole, you know, like, I believe with the server-based ones, there's a continuous integration server. Is that set up for all of them?
All but Metro CSS, because I don't want to figure out how to hook that into TeamCity. JetBrains have been very nice to donate a license to TeamCity and ReSharper for us core members so that we can get absolutely everything into the CI server.
It wouldn't be too bad. You just call like YUI compressor or the AJAX minifier in a step like from what do you call that? The PowerShell script. Yeah, use the PowerShell runner.
You're right. It probably wouldn't be too bad, except I'm not a web guy and I suck at PowerShell. So,
do you want to talk? We could either kind of start winding down. If you wanted, we could look at what's on some of the, you know, ideas on user voice and. I don't know if you'd want to comment on any of those that look interesting.
I think there's a few ideas around there that we need to kind of refine. Maybe that's something for, I was thinking maybe we could use our Twitter account to broadcast these ideas as they're kind of getting to that tipping point. Yeah, I'd rather leave that for today, but that could be at least the topic that we could talk about in the Jabber Room.
Okay.
There's some jerk who keeps pushing his diff merge tool idea.
You know what? Yeah, I'm willing to limit it to 2^32 power way merge. Yeah, it's funny. I've used WinMerge over the years, and it's good, but they've pretty much stopped development. They're doing the big rewrite, which, you know, I haven't heard anything from them for a few years. And the whole idea of a kind of plug-in base seems neat. This is one of my many, like we talked about earlier, the if I had the time, I would love to write a program that does X, you know, and all the things are like theoretically possible. And you can look and you'd say, I'd use this library and I'd do this and I'd do this. And you know that it could be done. It's just a question of time, you know. So
most of them are relatively simple. And you just kind of go, yeah, well, I'll add that to the backlog and, you know, it never gets done. And so, yeah, like there was someone who suggested a JSON div tool. Like, no one had really done that outside of doing a website, and we kind of went, we could plug this into here. So, yeah, I think these ideas that we've got, we kind of need to pull them together and spec them out. That's probably the first step to getting a better schedule together.
Sure.
It would even be good if someone kind of took an idea and started prototyping and, you know, got that knowledge on how it might go about and bring it back to us. You know, we're open to that, so...
Yeah, John.
Well, yeah, so, and I noticed that, I mean, so things are, the new projects picked Monday nights, but then there is some work in order to, you know, people can't just show up and say, okay, I'm here, because it does take some work to set up those tasks, to kind of provide some direction to, you know, get the project started and put in Git and, you know, all that kind of infrastructure kind of stuff. So I could see that that would be something if people are able to, you know, start preparing the way for these projects, you know, then when it starts.
I think that's starting point at least. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We've gotten reasonably quick at doing the intro post, setting up the Git repository, setting up the Trello board, but still then you kind of need that baseline code for people to be able to start off with. Yeah, that's a bit of a scouting step, again, to use a metaphor.
Can you talk a little bit about how that infrastructure works? I mean, I know like there's Pretzel, there's some of these things that you, some of the projects have been arranged to make it easier to create projects. You know, how does that work go behind the scenes as far as getting things going? Do you know what I mean? Like you've got, for instance, you need to create, you need to keep a website going. I know that you use GitHub Pages for that.
Yep. So the GitHub Pages uses Jekyll behind the scenes to take Markdown and render it up. We use a similar tool called Pretzel to do that locally. So we can have our little Git repository spinning it up and testing that code locally. We can then push straight to GitHub, and it's rendered. We don't need to have a separate hosting site. We can do custom domains for everything. That's the probably one of my favorite parts of GitHub, aside from the auto-merge giant green button.
Yeah, a lot of the tools we've chosen have been specifically to make things easier. So GitHub Pages was chosen because we don't have to then do website maintenance. We just post content. We don't have to worry about uptimes or anything like that. We don't have to worry about bills. GitHub was also chosen for much the same reason, that it's relatively well known. The tooling's not the greatest on Windows, but it is there for every platform. And yeah, the auto-merge button, the pull requests, all those sort of things are better, or we're found in our own experience, on GitHub for free than any other site out there. Codeplex, for example, is too slow. And the attitude on Codeplex is very, very different to the GitHub attitude as in the community around it. App Harbor is fantastic for throwing these prototypes on. So that, again, it doesn't require any server maintenance. It doesn't require giving people special access or anything like that. It pulls in from our Git repositories where appropriate and builds the site for us.
So I think that is a key thing that you've pointed out there, is that you've picked all these services and things that are both, you know, low friction, but also there's no cost to spinning up a site, right? I mean, GitHub being free, App Harbor, you can do a basic site on there. Jabber is free. You know, I mean, everything that you're doing, it scales infinitely pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. And that way, if anyone wants to replicate what we're doing, be it code 365 or, you know, for a different Linux or whatever they want, if that's what they want to specialize in, they can replicate what we've done very easily with very little cost.
One other thing as far as just kind of, you know, day in, day out work is the merging. You talked about the green auto merge button. I mean, how much work does it take to do a merge? Do you do a pretty rigorous review of these, or are you able to kind of after a while say, okay, this is probably going to work and go with it?
It depends on where we are in the project. At the start, because there's no code in there, it's a lot easier to do the auto merging fairly confidently. As the project progresses, we are doing fairly rigorous code reviews, much to the frustration of the others, where we can point out, you know, this is going to crash or it's wrong for whatever reason. And the green auto merge certainly does help a huge amount because we can do the review on the website without necessarily having to compile it. And that's where the CI server comes in, so that we know where it's breaking, those sort of things.
And having the inline views is pretty good because, I mean, you get to have a point at which someone could point out to you, hey, this could be wrong, or could you do this another way? And you get that sort of immediate feedback. Whereas if we just merged it in and changed it, it'd be on you to go back and have a look. I mean, it may not be as good pushing, you know, you have to fix this before we'll allow it back onto the user, but it kind of helps at the same time. I think we're pretty much harsher on our own code for each other in reviews than we have been for anyone else.
Yeah, I've been told that I can't do reviews of Brendan's code anymore.
Did you make him cry?
Once or twice.
So how does the, part of the thing that you're pointing out with continuous integration is if you do have tests available, you know, you're able to get some sort of verification there. How has testing been working? Is it, I know like in IdeaStrike, Scott Kuhn contributed some tests there. Do you have people that are contributing some tests, or is it hit and miss?
I'm the designated testing Nazi of the group, so if I get time to write tests when I'm doing code, I will. Most of the tests that I have playing around the place are mine. I've picked up a whole bunch of different habits from doing all this Code52 stuff. It's been excellent, and I will keep working on everyone else to get more tests.
There have been a few people who have committed tests, but it's generally if the test framework's already set up, people are less reluctant to add their own tests in. Unfortunately, given the timeline of a week, unless someone's quite good at setting up that test infrastructure, it's quite difficult to find the time to do that, to set up the tests, keep them going, and develop code.
Yeah, we should start talking about having tests in pull requests. If we can get the code base to the point where there's no excuse, then yeah, we'll see.
Okay, so how about we move on to the next part of our podcast, which is the Pimpio stuff section. We actually have background theme music. And so what are you guys up to in the near future?
I've got a couple of user groups coming up, or actually conferences rather. I'm going over to Code Mania in Auckland end of March, and I'll be over in NDC. So if any European peeps want to catch up, or Kiwis, drop us a line in the Jabber Room and see if we can organize something.
I'm going to have a big nap because Code52 is tiring.
Yeah, 44 weeks more projects for me, so...
Enough, guys, come on.
No big travelling around NDC, around Norway, that's for sure.
If we are pretty much done, I guess we could end with a, you know, call for people to get involved and, you know, remind them kind of how easy it is to do that.
Code52.org.
There you go.
Had to happen sometime. I was just going to joke that they can come in and tell us what frameworks we're using wrong or how we should be doing it for Linux. Maybe we should do a start petition, get a push for one of these conferences, pay for John to come over.
That's right.
Well, TechEd had Jeff Wilcox come over and speak last year on Windows Phone. You can talk about MVC4, John.
I will fly in luggage class.
I think Code Mania has Phil Hack coming over, and that they were paying for that. But I think he's now with GitHub, now that he's got an actual payment for that. So they got to have a bit of money.
Damien Edwards is over there as well. Catch up with him.
Yeah, but he's in with the whole Australian thing.
Nah, it's New Zealand. It's a whole different country.
Oh, no. I know this is a sore subject from watching Flight of the Conchords.
Yes.
Well, okay, we should probably wrap up there, I guess.
Awesome.
Thanks for having us on the show.
Yep. Thank you. And thank you for living in the future. And maybe we'll catch up with you later in the year and see if you've continued to survive. To code 52.
Yeah, we haven't killed each other.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. That's all the time we have this week on Herding Code, and we'll catch you next week or whenever it is on the next Herding Code.